This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 11. We've got a great interview scheduled today with John Palmer. We're going to talk about Irish stout beer recipes. Before I get into that, I got two quick announcements. The first is I published a number of hop and yeast updates for Beersmith. So if you're a Beersmith user, you can go to the tools menu on your Beersmith copy and go down to update Beersmith from the internet, and you can grab those two new updates. Also, if you haven't picked up a copy of my book, which is called Homebrewing with Beersmith, it's on sale on Amazon now for a rock-bottom price of $13.22, so a good time to grab that. Now, without further ado, let's go into this week's interview. Okay, today on the show we have John Palmer, who's the author of How to Brew and has been a guest before on the show. He's also the co-author of Brewing Classic Styles with Jamil, and he co-hosts Brew Strong on the Brewing Network. So, John, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate being here.
Great to have you back. And now with St. Patrick's Day coming, a lot of people out there like to enjoy celebrating with Irish beers. So I thought we'd focus today a little bit on Irish stout.
Sounds good.
Now, you wrote one of the definitive books, Brewing Classic Styles, on beer styles, along with Jamil Zainashev. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of stouts and how they came into being?
Well, sure. They started out in the 1700s, mid-1700s, kind of with the style of beer referred to as porter or entire. And that beer was brewed with the common malt of the day, a brown malt. That is, it was highly kilned over wood fires. So it had a little bit of a smoky character to it. It was browned by the heat, so it had a real dry toastiness to it. You can still get some brown malt today from the Scottish maltster, escapes me, of course, at the moment. But you can still find some brown malt, and it's interesting to brew with just for accent. But that beer. Started out as a mid-level beer, 50s to 60 OG, and then it started getting stronger, and it became known as stout porter and strong
porter too was another term, I think, right?
Yeah, and it started working its way up into kind of a Russian imperial stout sort of style, and then it kind of drifted back down again. So what we've got today, in terms of the stout family, you have your draught stout draft stout, which is a low gravity beer, a session beer. You've got for an extra stout, or extra stout that is more of a mid level beer, 10-55 OG, and has a little bit more sweetness and backbone to it than the draught style. Got your Russian Imperial Stout, Milk Stout, Oatmeal Stout, quite a variety. But they all have this common roast barley coffee character to them that ties them together.
Mm-hmm. So they were all derived originally from porters, though, right? And the porter became stout porter, and then eventually they dropped the name porter and just became stouts.
That's correct.
So the definitive Irish stout is no doubt Guinness, which of course is made in Dublin, Ireland. Yep. Can you tell us a little bit about Guinness and what makes it so distinctive?
Okay, well, yeah, it's been around since 1760 or thereabouts, and so just a well recognized name. A lot of other Irish stouts nearby, Beamish and Murphy's. And they all, have this common thread of a fairly low gravity, 1035, 1040, 1045 tops. And they have predominantly base malt with up to about 20 to 30% adjuncts or specialty grains like the roast barley. and flaked barley that's used to give them body. But really, no, not much in the way of caramel malts. Not a lot of sweetness going on in a stout. It's mostly the dry roast characters.
Now, the Irish stout is definitely much drier than traditional stouts. Yeah. Now, despite the heavy flavor, the draft Guinness sold in Ireland is actually pretty light by modern standards. It has a low gravity, starting gravity around 1.036. Right. And also has a pretty low alcohol content, typically a little over 3%. Right.
To be a session beer.
It's a session beer, yeah. What gives the beer that distinctive body and flavor, though, even though it's got that low starting gravity?
Yeah, it's the flaked barley. It's flaked barley is simply, it's unmalted. So it hasn't gone through the germination process at the maltster. It's, you know, kind of picked and dried and then dehusked and steam, little steam cooking goes on, to drive some of the conversion of insolubilization of starches inside the, kernel. And then that is rolled out and flattened under heat. And that drives that conversion of starches to, or from insoluble starches to soluble starches that can be utilized in the mash and converted to sugars by the mash enzymes.
Right, because it's unmalted to start with, right? The flake barley is basically unmalted barley that they roll out, as you point out.
Right, it's hard as a rock. I mean, you really can't bite through an unmalted barley kernel. It's pretty hard stuff. So by, you know, steam cooking it partially and then flattening it out and cooking it some more, they drive the breakdown of the endosperm and conversion of insoluble starches to soluble starches, which, you know, allows it to be utilized. You can make beer with, you know, raw barley from the field, but it'll take a long time because the germination hasn't happened. That's what the maltster is all about, is getting access to those starches.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you wanted to brew a typical 5-gallon batch of Irish stout, what would the grain bill look like? Well, how would you start that?
You'd start out with a English pale malt. Has a nice biscuity background to it. It's 2 or 3 Lovibond or 4 to 6 EBC. Mm-hmm. And that has, you know, a little different character than traditional lager malt that you get, you know, base malt here in the U.S. or in Europe. Has a touch of that biscuit character to it, a little bit of warmth to that flavor. And that's the backbone of a stout. You start out with about 6 pounds. And then to that, you would add about 2 pounds of flake barley and then about 1 pound of roast barley. Mm-hmm. And that's a stout recipe. That's for, you know, for a draft style Guinness, 1.036, 1.040. That it's a fairly simple beer.
So, yeah, I mean, one of the mistakes I think a lot of people do is they try and put in chocolate malts and, you know, black patent malts and a lot of other malts that then tend to add a lot of sweetness. And actually, you don't want to do that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can if you want to brew a foreign extra stout or, you know, make a different, basically, if you want to make a different kind of stout, you can do that. But for a simple Guinness style beer, you're looking at a very simple grain bill and a low gravity beer. It's the fullness of the body comes from the flake barley. And the rich coffee character comes from the roast barley.
Right. Now you mentioned roast barley, which is also sometimes called stout roast. Right. What's different about roast barley versus, say, black patent malt or some of the other dark malts that we're familiar with? You know, how is it different?
Well, it's the difference is in the malting or the lack of it. The barley is malted, you break down and change the proteins in that kernel. And by changing the proteins, you change the melanoidins that form during the roasting process. Mm-hmm. And as you look at the different specialty malts out there, whether you're talking about crystal malts or chocolate malt, or black malt or black patent malt, each of these has a different starting character from how it was malted whether it's malted and roasted when it was wet or if it was dried first.
And temperature, of course, is that it's ultimately dried at. A lot of the darker malts are roasted at a fairly high temperature, right?
Right. Yeah, there's a transition when you get to about 350 degrees Fahrenheit of the kilned character, which is your Munich malt and crystal malts and so on. You get to about 350 degrees and then you change the kind of melanoidins that form chemically. And a melanoidin is the combination of a sugar and a protein or amino acid. Mm-hmm. And these flavor compounds kind of change at that point. And then you get into your roasted characters where you get your chocolate, your flavors, your coffee flavors, and some actually roasty, smoky characters. You go to the very high high temperatures, very, very black patent malts and so on. A little bit goes a long way.
Yeah.
And that's, I think you get a much more acrid character out of a black patent malt than you do out of a roast barley. Right. The roast barley is a little more restrained. You can use more of it, make a richer coffee flavor without making that coffee flavor acrid.
Yeah. And it's interesting, I guess the roast barley is made from unmalted barley too. And I think it's the only, one of the only specialty malts I can think of, you know, except for like flake barley or something like that, that's right. Actually made from an unmalted barley. Almost everything else is made from malted barley, right?
Right. That's right.
Now, the roast barley puts so much flavor into the beer that you really have to balance that out with quite a bit of hops. What kind of hops do you recommend for an Irish stout, and how much do you need?
Okay. Well, the hopping of a stout, it's predominantly a malty character that you're looking for in that beer. So even though you'll use 35, 40, 45 IBUs, kind of a one IBU per original gravity point ratio. The hop additions in a stout is very different from, say, a pale ale, where you're adding a lot of hops at the end to get a lot of hop aroma and flavor. In a stout, you're usually adding one bittering addition at the beginning of the boil at 60 minutes, mm-hmm. and letting that. And then depending on if, you know, the kind of the sub-style of beer, of draft stout you're trying to emulate, if say like a Murphy's or a Beamish, you can add one more addition, say after about, with about 20 minutes to go, a small addition just to provide hints of hop aroma and flavor. But again, you don't want to try to steal the show from the malt character.
No, I mean, even at 15 or 20 minutes, a lot of those fragile hop aroma oils are really going to boil off at that point, right?
Right, yeah. So you're just getting hints. And that's, and you, because you're just looking for an accent on mm-hmm. this beer. The predominant flavor you're looking for is the coffee, with hints of chocolate, hints of smoke, and a nice, rich flavor.
Right, because it certainly doesn't have a hoppy flavor to it when it's finished. I mean, if you look at the finished beer, it's very much roast malt, and you probably wouldn't even know there was that much hops in it, honestly.
Right.
Other than you need that hops to try and balance out these other flavors that are in the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John, one of the tricks that Guinness is reported to use is that they reportedly add a small amount of pasteurized soured beer after the beer, mm-hmm. after the thing's finished, to give it sort of an extra twang. Now, I know, there's some controversy over whether they actually do this or not, but I think it's kind of an interesting technique. Yeah. And I was wondering if you could just talk about that for a minute. How do you go about, say, souring a little bit of your beer and then adding at the end to give it a little bit of a sour flavor?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a closely guarded secret, or a highly rumored secret, depending on who you talk to. But what you can do is you can add a little bit of lactic sourness to the beer by taking a scoop from your mash, mm-hmm. and allowing that to just cool down to room temperature, you know, out of the mash tun, from your main mash temperature of 150 degrees, and cover it and let that sit for about 24, 36 hours. And in that time, the lactic acid bacteria that's present in the mash will go to town, and you get a lot of lactic acid sourness.
So it's kind of a sour mash technique, right? Basically, yeah. Is what you're doing here. You're pulling a little sample of wort off and letting it sour.
I'm talking about like a 2 quarts.
Right. It's not a lot.
2 quarts worth. And then, you would drink, you know, after that 24, 36 hours has gone by, you taste it, see where you are in terms of sourness, drain that out, you know, through a strainer, and then pasteurize it by heating it up to about 170 degrees for about 15 minutes. And that'll pasteurize it and, kill off the lactic acid bacteria.
Right. Cause there's a lot of nasty stuff growing in it at this point, right?
Right. Yeah. So then you can add that to your fermenter and let that, you know, ferment with the rest without worrying about souring the whole beer. You can find sour stouts these days. Belgian stout can have touches of that character depending on which brand you buy. But the sour brown is related to this technique where you get a dark beer that's been soured. Mm-hmm. But just a hint of that flavor can be interesting in a stout with that a little bit of that extra acidity to bring a little bit of brilliance to that malt background.
Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't talked yeast yet, but there's sort of two schools of thought there as far as Irish ale yeast. And I know some people prefer a traditional Irish or English yeast, which of course has, you know,
right,
fairly high number of esters and leaves a higher finishing gravity. And there's other people that say, no, you ought to use a really clean, you know, high attenuation, maybe like a California ale yeast or something like that, that's going to finish that beer down to something that's really dry and has that dry finish on it. What are your thoughts on that?
I like the Irish character. I think if you brew with California ale yeast, something that's too clean,
yeah.
All you tend to taste, I mean, depending on your malt bill and your water chemistry, but all you tend to taste is a kind of a one-dimensional roast character, mm-hmm. which, you know, can be pleasant and can be what you're looking for, but it doesn't have the complexity that keeps you coming back to that beer. So I think the Irish ale yeast with some, you know, a little bit of the apple pear esters that you get, a little bit of the grape, and a moderate finishing, moderate attenuation, keeps just a touch of residual sweetness and gives you some accents, some esters that add to the complexity of this beer.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I'm a big fan of the Irish and also the English ale yeast that, you know, give you that complexity of the beer that you really want. And
some stouts, you know, will be brewed with lager yeast, and you may hear, you know, some brew pubs say, oh yeah, we brew our stout with lager yeast or something. I just think you end up with a too clean of a beer doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these, you know, the stout is intended to be a flavorful, yet light or yet low alcohol, session beer. It's something, you know, it's supposed to be interesting. And so I think that's where you're looking for that complexity.
Right. And I think when you taste a glass of Guinness or a glass of Murphy's or one of the other famous beers, you can definitely taste that complexity in the beer. It's not a one-dimensional beer at all.
Right.
Now, the water in Dublin also plays a role here. Dublin water is fairly high in calcium and high in carbonates and also highly alkaline. How does that affect your finished beer? I know you're a bit of an expert on water here, so I'm hoping you can explain this to me.
Well, that's the other key to Irish stout is that they have a highly alkaline water source. We're talking total alkalinity of 150 to 200 parts per million, mm-hmm. As calcium carbonate. And what this does is that residual alkalinity balances the acidity of the dark malts. I think that's a real key to brewing a really good stout is you need to have a water that has alkalinity to it. If you have a low alkalinity water,
the mash is going to be too acidic, right?
Yeah, it'll be a little too acidic. And that's where, you drive that beer to taste kind of one-dimensional. It can still be pleasant, but just not interesting. It's just you get a one-dimensional roast character. But by balancing that roast and moving the pH up, and or at least actually what you're doing is you're getting back to your ideal, you know, mash pH range of around 5.4 right. to 5.8 at room temperature. Now you've, well, it's the difference between good coffee and bad coffee, you know?
Right. I mean, the most important factor here is having your mash pH right, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you don't start...
And that's what your water chemistry allows you to do is to balance this large amount of dark malt.
Right, because the more dark malt you add, the more acidic the mash becomes, right? Right? And so if you don't have alkaline water to balance all that acidity that you're throwing into this mash, you basically end up with, as you point out, a one-dimensional beer.
Yeah.
And
the alkaline water kind of is serves some of the same purpose as adding cream to your coffee. Mm-hmm. The alkalinity or the non-acidity of milk, can balance and mellow out a very bitter coffee or very, acidic coffee and make it more palatable.
Now, what about the carbonates? Do they come into play here at all in terms of bitterness?
No, the carbonates really just exist as alkalinity, which kind of takes the acidity down. So, calcium carbonate is how you describe total alkalinity. Mm-hmm. In beer brewing at the pHs we're working with, anywhere from 5 to 6, actually the dominant species is bicarbonate or HCO3.
Right.
But they don't have much of a flavor themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who has ever had a draft Guinness knows that it has a pretty unique head on it. You get sort of that white, creamy head on top of your draft Guinness when they pour it. Mm-hmm. But there's a trick they use to do that. It's not just your typical CO2 carbonated pour. How do they actually get that creamy head? How do you get that draft Guinness finish?
Well, there's two parts to that. And one secret to it is the flaked barley. Flaked barley has a lot of malt malt. It's unmalted, but it has a lot of hoarding or barley proteins mm-hmm. that form the building blocks for that foam.
Right.
And with, as opposed to say, typical American lager, Bud or something like that, we're using a lot of low protein adjunct like corn or rice to thin the body of the beer. With stout, you've got what is essentially an all malt beer. It's all barley.
Yeah.
And all this protein going into that beer provides for the thick, rich head you get. Now, the way you build that up is you can add a sparkler or a foamer on your tap, or use a carbon dioxide nitrogen blend.
Which is something they also do typically with draft Guinness, right? They use a nitrogen blend.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that? I know a lot of people are familiar with a CO2 setup, and a lot of people have kegs at home where they have a CO2 tank, but how do you actually add nitrogen in, and how do you get a nitrogen mix?
Okay. Well, the interesting thing about nitrogen is that it is not soluble in beer. Mm-hmm. It's really not soluble in water, but by pressurizing the keg, you force it into solution. And so when you open the can, or you pour that beer,
right? Some of the Guinness cans have a little cartridge in them that actually has nitrogen in it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the funny thing when you read the patent on how that works. All it is just a little plastic bubble with a hole in the side, which fills with beer. When you open the can, the nitrogen immediately comes out of solution. Like I say, it's not it's not really soluble in water like carbon dioxide is.
Mm-hmm.
You can open a normal can of beer or soda, and until you start pouring, there's really not a lot of bubbles coming up. It'll sit there quiescent, because that carbon dioxide is able to dissolve in. But nitrogen comes out of solution right away. Mm-hmm. And so it also comes out of solution in that side, that little widget. And in doing so, forces the beer inside the widget out that out a tiny hole. And that sets up the foaming. And also because the nitrogen is insoluble, it forms much smaller bubbles than carbon dioxide.
Yeah, you can notice, and, I mean, you notice on a Guinness head, it's very, very fine bubbles. Right, I mean, it's not a normal thing. It's due to that nitrogen, right?
Right, right.
Interesting. Now, one other trick they use, of course, is something called a stout tap. And so I was wondering if you could talk just a minute about what a stout tap is.
Well,
I mean, when they pour it, they actually use a special tap, right?
Yeah. They pour it through a thinner tube, which, again, kind of helps the turbulence to get more gas coming out of solution. And then they kind of focus that down again, creating smaller bubbles. And so even on a purely CO2 system, you get a smaller bubble coming out of these stout faucets than you do a regular faucet. Mm-hmm. And also then you can add the beer mix to that and get a smaller bubble and a creamier head out of that also. They also have a feature on those where you can, as you're pouring, you tip that handle back and it causes more turbulence inside.
Yeah, it actually runs it through. I think it's actually inside, there's like a little diffuser or something that kind of creates an additional head on top. And what you do, of course, is you use the stout tap, as you mentioned, you pull it forward to fill the glass, and then you push it back to create the creamy head on the top, right?
To foam it up, yeah, right.
And so it really just foams up the beer even more as it's coming out the top there. Kind of interesting, though. Yeah. So if you're a real stout fan, you can get yourself a nitrogen can to go with your CO2 and a stout tap to go with it as well, right?
That's right.
Now, do you have any tips on brewing techniques for Irish stout? Is there anything special you want to do for fermentation, aging, techniques you might know, even mashing techniques you might use for brewing an Irish stout?
It's a well attenuated beer. Again, like we said, it's a session beer. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, for a single infusion mash, you're looking at about 150 degrees Fahrenheit, something that's down right at the transition from beta amylase to alpha amylase.
Right, and so you're mashing at a lower temperature, which is going to drive you to a lower body beer, right? Overall,
it drives it to a higher attenuation,
right?
And then the yeast, the Irish ale yeast, is of medium attenuation, so it leaves behind some of these light sugars, mm-hmm. and that's how you get that that touch of sweetness in what's otherwise a very dry beer style.
Mm-hmm. So that's the mash. What about the rest of the process here? Is there anything special you'd want to do as you're brewing?
Well, when you're doing an all grain version of a stout and using a large proportion of flake barley, the flake barley, you know, not being through the malting process, has a lot of what we call beta glucans. And beta glucans are responsible for the gumminess of dough. You know, especially if you think of bread dough, how elastic it is and so on. That's due to the beta glucans that are present in that dough. And it'll make your mash very gummy too and very difficult to lauter. So like in brewing classic styles, Jamil recommends on his recipes to do a combined beta glucan low protein rest of about 120 degrees Fahrenheit for about 20 minutes. And doing so will break down the gumminess and give you a mash that's much easier to lauter. After that 120 rest, then you'll kick it up to about 150, 155 in that range to finish it out.
So fermentation, anything in there you should do special?
No, typical, you know, typical ale fermentation, really. You can play a little bit with your pitching rate and your fermentation temperature to, you know, either encourage or decrease the esters that you mm-hmm. get from the Irish ale yeast.
Complexity, yeah.
Yeah. I'd recommend, going with Irish ale yeast and somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 degrees and for a week or so. Mm-hmm. And you'll it's a pretty average regimen, but that's where you get the character of the yeast coming out. And you should have a real nice complex estuary beer out of that.
Now, because flake barley has to be mashed, it's hard for an extract brewer to make a true Irish stout without using some kind of a special stout extract. Can you give us any tips for somebody trying to brew an Irish stout just from extract?
Sure. Start out with an English pale malt extract, mm-hmm. or a stout kit that should be English in nature. John Bull, Muntin's, these English maltsters making these extracts are from the English pale malt and from other English malts. The pale malt extract, the English pale malt extract. To that, I would add about a pound of roast barley and grind that very fine, put it inside of a sock or grain bag, a very fine mesh grain bag. If you have a low alkalinity water, one where your hardness is pretty low, you live in an area where your water supply comes predominantly from snow melt or from streams or lakes. Mm-hmm. The hardness is pretty low. Then I would suggest you might try cold steeping the crushed roast barley. Cold steeping over a period of a couple hours, kind of like making sun iced tea. It decreases the amount of tannin that you get out of that. Wort, and you can add that to your boil after you've done your after you've started your you can add towards the end of the boil, not boil the grain itself. Cuts down on the acidity. If your water source on the other hand is predominantly groundwater, then you should have enough alkalinity in your water where you can do a traditional crushed grain steeping in your hot water prior to starting your boil. Also, to get the character of the flaked barley to some extent, mm-hmm. you could try adding about 3/4 of a pound of maltodextrin powder. Now, maltodextrin powder is a non-fermentable sugar. It's heavy enough, and it gives a feeling of some of the body that you get from the flaked barley with its beta glucans.
Right, it gives you a lot of body without. It doesn't dramatically change the flavor of the beer, though, which is one of the advantages.
Yeah, it really doesn't have any sweetness that we can taste to it.
Right,
and it's non-fermentable, so it'll give some more residual body. Yeah,
I like that idea. Gravity. I like that. I think that's a great suggestion for folks that are brewing extract. If you're looking for that extra body. You can't use flake barley, obviously, because it has to be mashed. I think that's maltodextrin is a great alternative.
Yeah. Normally, if you think about other extract beer styles like pale ale or porter or brown ale, mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see suggestions to add maybe a half pound of maltodextrin, for some body to that, to add a little body to that extract beer recipe. But the difference here is that you're going up to 3/4 of a pound instead of like a half pound or a quarter pound.
Right.
Because you're trying to really add quite a bit of sensation of body and mouthfeel to the beer.
Well, John, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Again, that was John Palmer, author of How to Brew at howtobrew.com. And also the book Brewing Classic Styles, which he did with Jamil Zainasheff. Thanks again, John.
You're welcome.
Okay, that wraps up this week's show. If you have any feedback for the show, as usual, you can leave a message at the Beersmith blog at beersmith.com/blog under this particular episode. Or you can also leave your comments at the Beersmith discussion forum, which is at beersmith.com/forum. I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you have a happy St. Patrick's Day and have a great brewing week.